The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Hot Stove edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Not any developments at this very hour, but it has been a busy day. The rumors are more intense than they have been, basically, you know, in a few weeks. So we're going to be getting into a lot of them, most of it centering around Alex Bregman. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Jason Kelly, Nick Diamond. How are you guys?
I'd be better if we had a right-handed bat as an addition to this lineup, but we still don't. And I know people keep saying, oh, there's still time to go, still time to go. January is a week away from being over, and we still haven't replaced Tyler O'Neill. So I'm a little frustrated about that, but otherwise I'm just dandy.
Yeah, I feel the same. We're only about, like, 3 weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting, so it's not that far away at this point. So if they don't sign soon, they're just going to start missing time. So I hope we get somebody soon. It doesn't look like we're going to get Bregman. We'll get into it, but there's not many options left after that, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Anthony Santander came off the board. Apparently his deal is like heavily deferred. He's got a weird contract, but signed with the Blue Jays nonetheless. The Blue Jays came out and said that they do have more payroll flexibility to spend. And then as we have heard today, apparently they're in fairly advanced negotiations with Pete Alonso. We was going to start with Bregman, but to me, Alonso is the safety net if you miss out on Bregman. And it's looking like Alonso might come off the board first.
Yeah, Alonso would be interesting because he'd have to be your full-time DH, right? So then it's really just the only domino after that is what do you do with Yoshida? And frankly, you could DFA Yoshida for all I care. But obviously, they want to try to recoup some of that money. So, you know, you might have to look at one of these teams that's looking to hit the floor or at least add some money. And maybe they're interested in Yoshida a little bit. Alonso is not really my cup of tea. I think that he's just kind of, he's entering a phase of his career where he's reminding me of like Mark Trumbo a little bit. And I'm not saying he is Mark Trumbo. That's a little bit of a tough comparison, but he's just going to hit 235, hit, you know, maybe 30, 35 home runs, but there's not much else he does. Doesn't play defense. He strikes out a ton. Him at Fenway would be pretty fun to watch, but he's not for me. I would rather some other team give him whatever contract he's going to end up with because, you know, he turned down a lot of money from the Mets and he's hoping to get a little bit higher of a contract from someone else. If that ends up being the Blue Jays, all the power to him. He doesn't scare me within the division. He would scare me more actually coming here on like a multi-year deal for 30 plus million a year. So he can be a safety net, but it's just, there's a reason why we use the word safety net. It's not a very attractive option to me.
You know, I think if he ends up on the Blue Jays, we're going to hate him. He's going to hit 40 home runs a year in that tiny, it's not really a tiny ballpark, but the ball flies out of there. It just always seems like it does. So I think he'll hit 40 bombs for the next 3 years if he signs there. But the one thing I kind of look forward to him signing there would be is, you sign him and Santander in the same offseason. That's two DH types and first base type of players. That means Vlad is probably walking out the door next offseason. If they sign Alonso, I think that means they're not giving the $400-450 million to Vlad, and that kind of benefits us in the long run. I know the Mets are probably going to beat us out in that pursuit, but I think that's the only saving grace if he does end up on the Blue Jays. I wouldn't mind him on the Red Sox, but it would have to be in that DH only role, and that means Yoshida would have to be DFA'd. I think he'd be fine for 1 or 2 years. I think he will decline, though, but hitting over the monster is really attractive for him.
I mean, he could DH to start, but the odds of Casas going a full, let's just say 140, I think are pretty slim. And the one thing Alonso does bring is durability. Played all 162 games this previous year, 154 the season before that, 160 in 2022, 152 in 2021. And when you guys were kind of giving your comps and all that, I'm thinking, well, you know, he's probably Tyler O'Neill, just way more durable. Maybe he's got natural HGH flowing through him and he just doesn't get hurt. I don't know. Strikeouts haven't been a huge problem prior to this year. This past year, 172, I would say that's a lot. You know, I'd like him to be 150 or under, and the less under that, the better. But I mean, not terrible. Let's go back to, 2023, 151, 128 the year before that. And he's playing every game, by the way, just about. So, you know, you're above 650 at bats, and actually just under 650 4 years ago. So I'm okay. I just, if it's a 3 year deal, I can live with it. Three for Alonso versus six or seven for Bregman. I don't know. But I would take Arenado, as I've been harping on all winter. Let's get over to Bregman now. So I wouldn't say things were hot and heavy a week or so ago or through last weekend, but it did seem like the Red Sox were sort of the front runner. Buster Olney was indicating that. So was Ken Rosenthal, John Heyman. Lots of reports saying he's there for the taking for the Red Sox. Fast forward to Thursday night, not so much. What are your thoughts, Jason?
Yeah, it definitely changed. And you got to wonder if it was just the negotiations have been back and forth. Obviously, I think it's pretty clear now that Bregman wants at least 6 years. You know, he might settle for like five, but he wants five plus in terms of years on his contract. I don't know in terms of the money. I think it really is just the years with him. He doesn't want to take a short-term deal. I can kind of understand why a guy in his position who, let's face it, the last couple of years he has been declining a little bit. And I'm sure that he looks at it and says, you know, if I have one bad injury in, you know, the middle of a three-year contract, I'm going to cost myself a ton of money, you know, in my mid to late 30s. So Bregman's trying to set himself up and his family and whatever for the future. Totally get that. But it feels like the Red Sox aren't budging. I think they've made it pretty clear they don't want him on 6 or 7 years. They want him on a short-term deal or maybe a short-term deal with options. And I think that it just got to a point where the Tigers are still interested in him, the Blue Jays are still interested, and now the Astros seem to be opening the door back up and saying, you know what, you know, they've had kind of a weird offseason where they've said everybody's available, but we still want to compete. But we're going to trade Kyle Tucker, and you know, now they're looking to trade their closer to make room for Bregman if he wants to come back. It's not even a guarantee that he wants to. So they're having a very strange offseason, but it's becoming pretty clear that he's fed up with the negotiations with the Red Sox. And I think he's letting it be known that he's back open for business. Cause like you said, it was like him and the Red Sox were this close. I mean, it was like, it felt imminent that he was going to sign here. And then it just slowly drifted apart. And now it's, no, I'm still open for business. And I'm back interested in the Tigers, Blue Jays offers. And now I'm talking with the Astros again. So to me, this seems like it falls on Breslow because he's the one picking up the phone. He's the one doing these negotiations. Now, look, if Henry and, you know, Kennedy are telling him you can only sign him for this much and that's below Bregman's number, then okay, that's a different story. But we don't know that. All we know is that John Henry at one point this offseason was willing to spend $700 million on one player. So I find it hard to pair that with, oh, he's back to being cheap again. To me, this is, you know, a rookie GM who is, you know, let's face it, maybe not ready for this role, who is now entering into negotiation with a, you know, highly sought out player, and he's struggling. He's struggling to get Bregman under the contract that he wants, and he's struggling to get Bregman the contract that he deserves. So it feels to me like this was a negotiation falling apart kind of thing rather than just a money issue. But that's just how I see it, and we'll see what happens going forward. But it feels like Alex Bregman will not be in a Red Sox uniform next year.
Nick?
I'll agree that I don't think he'll be on the Red Sox next year at all, but I don't think Alex Bregman is a very sought-after player at the moment. I think we saw a report today that that offer from the Astros is still on the table, what, 5 years, 156?
Six.
If that's still on the, or 6 years, 156, you're right. If that's on the table, why hasn't he signed it today? Because he's not getting a better offer than that. He's not getting that from the Tigers. He hasn't got that from the Blue Jays, it seems like. He certainly hasn't got that from the Red Sox. Unless he thinks the Red Sox are going to match that, because we all know the Red Sox are not going to match that. Why hasn't he signed that today? So that makes me believe it's not real, and it might come down to that four-year-ish. I don't think it'll go below that. I don't think Bregman wants to do this again. I also don't think the Red Sox will give a pick for him in a shorter type of deal, like a one-year, two-year deal with opt-outs. I don't think they want to give up a comp pick for that, you know, for 1 year of Bregman. I just don't see that happening. I think Breslow values that too much. He's going to want that Nick Pivetta pick, but it doesn't look like that's happening. But yeah, I just don't think they're going to give up that pick for 1 year of Bregman or 1 year in opt-outs. So I think it's going to have to be at least 4 years if the Red Sox want him, and I don't think they're going to get him.
I think it has to be 6 years and maybe even a seventh, honestly. And, you know, I'm probably more anti-Bregman than anyone except Charlie. I think you guys are probably more open to him. But I'm at the point now where I'm riding this roller coaster, and I'm at the point now where just sign someone. If it's Bregman, okay. It doesn't make a ton of sense to me, but go ahead.
See, one good thing about Bregman is if Cora's really set about putting him at second base, if in 2 months Campbell's blowing up or AAA, you can call him up and move Devers off a third if you have to. I just think Arenado makes more sense if you want to commit to that from opening day, you know, if you want to just go get your third baseman and move Devers now. But I think it's just weird you want to move this all-star third baseman to second base and then maybe move him back to third. I know people say that the Bregman leadership will bring us like a good vibes. Maybe moving all these all-stars around to different spots in the middle of their careers is a bad thing too. Moving Devers off a third, moving Bregman off a third. I think it's just maybe too many moving parts. Bregman's not a perfect fit, and everyone thinks he is. I don't think he's a bad fit for 1 or 2 years, but it's not going to happen.
Well, Cora spoke a week or two ago. It might have even been at that winter weekend, whatever they call it, where he said he's always felt that Bregman is a second baseman based on how he moves, but that was never going to happen in Houston with Altuve, and you weren't going to put him at shortstop with Correa, so that's how he became a third baseman. So Cora at least sees him as a bona fide second baseman. Now, whether that does translate, like Nick says, who really knows? I've been adamant, like I will die on the hill that Devers doesn't come off of third before July. Perhaps it ends up being a compromise halfway through the season. I think he'll go to first. I don't think in any scenario he becomes a DH unless he's hurt. I think, and here's why I say that. David Ortiz never had a choice, really. He wasn't relevant before he got here. And he became relevant as the DH, so he was fine with it. But I think Devers looks at it as, if I'm just sitting in the dugout all night except for my four at-bats, I'm not a baseball player anymore. And at 27 years old, he's not ready to give that up. Now, I think he can be persuaded to play first. And I bet that will happen more sooner than later. And if I'm wrong, like I said in the war room, I'll own it 100%. But it's just he's got his agents involved. And it just seems like everything's pointing towards he's staying at third for now.
Yeah, the other aspect to keep in mind is, you know, there's the pipe dream of Christian Campbell coming to spring training and lighting it up and looking like Mookie Betts did all those years ago. And, oh, what if he makes a team out of spring training? He'd have to have, like, a historic spring training because this is still the Red Sox. They want to wait until that June 1st date and get the extra seventh year out of him instead of calling him up right away and starting him, you know, in April. So there's still a distinct possibility that they lose out on Bregman and they just go, you know what, we feel comfortable with Hamilton and Grissom fighting it out for the second base job in spring training. And that should scare the crap out of you because that, to me, is untenable. David Hamilton, like, he had some good moments last year, but I think we all know what he is. He's a 4A player who's going to get exposed if you play him every day. And Vaughn Grissom, I have no faith in at the moment. Like, Vaughn Grissom would have to explode out of the gates and turn back into the hitter he was in Atlanta for me to even give him a thought, because right now he looks like damaged goods. So, you know, for the people pining for Christian Campbell, like I am, to be your starting second baseman, keep that June 1st date in mind. It's still the Red Sox. They're going to bleed as much out of that clock as they can.
You should be able to start Christian Campbell at second base and take Devers off of third. There's able to do that. You can keep Costas in the lineup. You could put Christian Campbell as a right-handed bat, and you can add a right-handed third baseman, and Devers is your DH. That is a perfect lineup. That is a lineup that can make the playoffs, but you got to keep Yoshida. They want to keep Campbell in the minors. They want to put a guy that's not even on the team yet, Bregman, at second base. Cora's already putting Bregman at second base. He's not even on the team. But we got this guy in the minors who's capable of hitting 25 homers, hopefully, and being your right-handed bat in the middle of the order, but they won't even look at him. So it's just either pay Bregman or don't, and let's stop talking about him. He's not that good. I don't think he's going to – I'm not saying he's bad, but I don't think he changes his team that much as I think a breakout year from Campbell can benefit the team more than a Bregman year.
So getting back to Bregman real quick, I wasn't really finished with my take. I think he would prefer Houston over the Red Sox. He knows it. He's comfortable with it. They've made some okay moves already. They got Paredes. They have – drop my pen. They added Christian Walker. And I don't know what they're going to do. They're pitching long-term. Who really knows? I mean, Valdez is in his last year. Verlander's gone. You know, Hunter Brown took a step forward last year. I think they've got one other young guy whose name I'm forgetting. But they got that Ronel Blanco guy. I don't know if that was a flash in the pan year or if he's really good or perhaps his ceiling's even higher. So I think it's comfortable enough for Bregman. If he goes to Boston, yeah, he's going to have a manager that backs him, but as we've spent the last 6 or 7 minutes talking about, that's a very unsettled infield. Does he really want to go into that, or does he just want to go home and play third base and in a division that's not that tough? You know, it's them and the Mariners, and the Mariners choke every starting August 15th every year.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because here he's being asked to potentially change positions, as Nick mentioned, like pretty quickly, you know, going from playing third base his whole major league career. I know he was, you know, a shortstop in college and everything, and a lot of people like Cora have said, you know, he'd be a good second baseman just given his size and his arm strength and all that. But still, that's an adjustment to make at age 30, 31, however old he is. So, you know, instead of just going back to Houston, playing third base with, you know, Altuve over there at second, and, you know, Christian Walker, a great defensive first baseman over there now, Pena at short, like that's what he's used to. And yeah, Houston probably has a better chance of contending than the Red Sox do right now. Their division is not that strong. they've even though they've lost, Kyle Tucker, they still have a really strong lineup, with Yordan Alvarez still sitting in the middle of it. So, he's probably looking at it going, if the Red Sox aren't going to give me the 6 years that I want, maybe I just need to take less money and get the 6 years from Houston that they offered. And yeah, I'll make less, but I might win another World Series in the middle of it. Unlike Boston, I might not win at all.
Go ahead, Nick.
I think the one more thing is he'll get his number retired in Houston. He'll be remembered there forever. So I think that's another thing he would, if the money's the same, might as well pick Houston. And then the ballpark is just as good. He's got that short the tall left field fence, but it's not very far away. It's like the same as Fenway down the line, the short Crawford boxes and left. There's no reason to pick the Red Sox over Houston if the money's the same.
And the other thing not being discussed is, will the Astros be willing to put opt-outs in? And I don't see why they wouldn't. But you look at Bregman here. Yeah, he drove in less runs, but that's not necessarily his fault. He's been consistently mid-20s runs batted in. The only category that really took a hit from him this year was his walks were down. His on-base percentage was down 50 points from the previous year. So that's the only kind of glaring thing I see. OPS plus down just slightly from 2023, down somewhat significantly from 2022. He was 134 OPS plus that year, 118. And I'm not a big advanced stat guy, but an average OPS plus is 100 even. So if you're 20 or 30 points above that, you're contributing. And if you're 60 to 80 points above that, you're Juan Soto or Aaron Judge. So that's about how high it'll get. He didn't have the best walk year performance, and I think that's kind of screwing him a little bit, but I think that offer that Houston gave him is fair. That's a fair deal. 6 years, $156 million. And if you're Scott Boras, look back to the previous year with Blake Snell when the Yankees offered him $6,150 and he said no. And then he had to sign that wonky 2 year deal with the Giants with the opt out after the first year. And so Boras, that was a big reason Boras looked like an incompetent imbecile last year. And that's probably a big reason why he got fired by a few guys, Jordan Montgomery, and I know there was at least one more key guy in there. But I think the Astros here are offering Scott Boras a bailout. And like, you can come back and do it, and maybe they'll put opt-outs in it. I don't think opt-outs are going to do Bregman any good. He'd have to have an off-the-charts year. They'd have to go back to October. And he'd have to have a really big October. And they got bounced right away this year by Detroit. So that didn't help him either. He didn't have that Nathan Eovaldi, October where you could just boost your value in a 30-day period. So it's far-fetched to me that he's going to go anywhere else. But I did throw this in the war room earlier, and I did see like a fringe article mentioning it. One team that needs a third baseman is the Washington Nationals, and they're not far away. They might this coming year, they might be the Orioles of a couple years ago, that out of nowhere, huge step forward. I don't know if they'll win that division. That's a stacked division, especially with the Mets, but they could, they could win 90 or so games if that young rotation and that young lineup comes through. And adding a Bregman type guy is the perfect leadership that a team like that could need. And despite no recent big spending, they're the third richest ownership group in Major League Baseball. So they have the money.
He would be interesting in Washington because they do need a veteran on that team. They're going to have a lot of their young guys breaking through and coming up. And you know, CJ Abrams was kind of the first. They got him from San Diego. And I feel like towards the end of last season, there were questions about his drive and sort of his, you know, his leadership, because they were expecting a lot of him and he kind of had a rough second half and he got benched for a couple of games. So a guy like Bregman would really help stabilize a young team like Washington that should be on the rise pretty quickly, but will they get there quick enough? Like, if you're Bregman, you want to start competing pretty quick, because yeah, he's only 31, but again, like I said, all it takes is, you know, one bad injury at this age, and you know, then he's, you know, barely getting on the field. So I think if he had the choice, if it came down to Houston or Washington, he's still taking Houston, even if Washington, you know, they might blow him out of the water with a money offer. They might just do what the Red Sox did with David Price years ago and just offer him like $20 million more a year than Houston does, and then he takes it. But if he really wants to compete and keep winning, I think he would prefer either Boston or Houston. But Washington could be one of those outlier teams. They've got money to spend, and they do have an ownership group that doesn't like to be at the bottom for very long. That's why they were so aggressive about, you know, retooling and selling off their assets when they could, because they wanted to, you know, fast jump their rebuild, and I think they have. So they could be an interesting choice.
I kind of agree about the fit. I just think they're a year off. I kind of looking at the roster right now, I think the point about CJ Abrams is great. I think putting Bregman right next to him for the next couple of years would be great for him. I just think they're a year off, and especially in that division, the Phillies aren't going anywhere. The Braves are going to be better. The Mets are going to be right back. So I think they're a fourth place team no matter what happens, even if they sign Bregman. And I know, but the Nationals have spent in the past. They have actually signed one of the best contracts of all time, I would say, with Max Scherzer. They got a ring out of him. You know, so I think that was like $210 million. So they are willing to spend. I don't think they will spend $160 million on Bregman, but I wouldn't be surprised if it just came out of nowhere that we see a pass and tweet 7 years, 165, Bregman to the Nats, and they just blow him out of the water. But I don't think he's the perfect fit either for them. I think they're probably going to spend next year if they're going to do it.
It's a dark horse, but I figured I'd throw it out there. If it happens, then the Bastards were the first ones to podcast about it. But one other thing of note, they do have a good relationship with Scott Boras. Scherzer, as you mentioned, Patrick Corbin, that didn't work out so well. The Nationals offered Bryce Harper a generous extension. It ultimately was declined. And they offered Juan Soto a record deal at that time for $425 million. So they've tried to work with Boras on guys, and they did work with him on others. So I don't know. I wouldn't close the book entirely on it until the deal does happen. But DC also not, DC and Baltimore have to be the worst places in terms of destination. I mean, both cities, a lot of activism going on, lots of crime. I mean, Kansas City sounds to me way better. Yeah, you're in the middle of America. You got cornfields all around you, but you know, it's not a bad place to be. All right. So I want to point this out. It's not going to be a show unless we bash Kennedy, or at least I do. I talked about the Dodgers in the last episode, and I didn't hit on this exact point. They've signed two ace pitchers, one of them Sasaki, so not the normal free agent type thing, but two ace pitchers, two ace relievers in Tanner Scott and Kirby Yates. And then they retained, you know, their second or third best right-handed bat, a guy we happen to want, Teoscar Hernandez. Now, there's one thing those guys all have in common. None of them were overpaid. They all got fair market deals. You might, you might argue maybe the Snell deal, the AAV is a little high, but it's a 5-year deal. So, I mean, come on. They all got, none of them blew their markets out of the water. And then there's the Red Sox. They're just not, they're not doing anything. Bregman's not going to be overpaid. You can get him probably for below what his preseason projections were. The same could be said for Pete Alonso. You could get him for below what the projections were. And then if you don't want to do that with either guy, you could get Nolan Arenado right away for almost nothing, for like $15 million a year. So what I'm getting at here is, we heard this impassioned speech from Sam Kennedy saying, yeah, we're willing to go past the luxury tax. It's time to start winning again. It's time to win the division again. And they have not signed one multi-year deal yet. And they can get any of these guys, as I said, without overpaying. So to me, if we come out of this and we don't even get Arenado, who's not going to break the bank, that could be the steal of the winter. And we've talked about that. I haven't presented it exactly like that, but he could have a beast of a resurgence at Fenway Park. And if you don't at least get him, their credibility is, it's already shot, but I don't, you're just 6 feet further under the ground now.
So I heard a number on Sports Hub earlier today that pertained to this, and I don't know how exact accurate it is, but it sounds right that since the Chaim Bloom era, since the beginning of the Chaim Bloom era, 93% of the Red Sox free agent contracts that they've handed out have been 1-year deals. 93%. They have a phobia of handing out multi-year deals. And go ahead, Nick. Yeah.
And the multi-year deals are Patrick Sandoval, Liam Hendricks, Lucas Giolito, and that might be it. Well, Masataka Yoshida.
And Trevor Story.
Yeah.
And Kike Hernandez. Those are the only ones.
But Kike Hernandez was 2 separate deals, wasn't it? Was it the multi-year deals?
The first one was 2 years.
Why? But does a year and an option count? I guess it does. Yeah.
It technically does. Yeah.
Well, Kike signed, the first deal was 2 years, $14 million. So he got 7 per.
Yeah, I guess. But none of these things have worked out. I mean, all of them have been reclamation projects of these pitchers like Sandoval and Liam Hendricks. And I guess Lucas Giolito at the time wasn't one, but now he is now. But yeah, none of these deals have worked out. Just go sign a star. That's what they need. They haven't done it ever in a long time. I guess since David Price, does that count as a star? JD Martinez, that's your last big splash, and that was 2 GMs ago.
Yeah, and the JD Martinez one in particular is a good one to bring up, because that should have been Teoscar Hernandez. Now, it wouldn't have been the exact same contract, but if, you know, and I'm talking about the first time around, not this past year, but last year, if you had just offered him an extra year, he would have been here. You would have had him under contract. He might have had a monster year at Fenway Park. You might have had a completely different 2024 season. Instead, the Red Sox, as usual, shy away. Once you want more than 2 years, oh, we're not interested. And eventually, that's just, it's not going to work. You have to give multi-year deals. If you want to really compete, if Sam Kennedy wants to be truthful and says, yep, we're going to spend and it's time to win the division again, okay, it's also time to go out and sign premier players and hand out big money, multi-year contracts. Yes, I know it's scary. I know they're scarred from Pablo Sandoval, Carl Crawford, Adrian Gonzalez. I get that. I completely understand that. That was years ago. It's just, are you going to constantly live in fear of, well, we can't give out a multi-year deal because it might not work? I mean, as Terry brought up, they signed Trevor Story. And to be fair, that one kind of hasn't worked out yet. that's been a little bit of a mild disaster, but they still did it. I mean, and you know, at the time, I think I was positive on it. I know Terry, you were very happy about that signing.
Yeah.
So like, why not just dip your toe back in the water? There's so many good players out there, and you are not far away. You're not far away from competing. You have this incredibly good farm system. The only good thing Chaim Bloom ever did when he was here was that farm system. And you've got guys like Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell who are ready to become superstars imminently. All you need is just a little bit more. And, you know, look, I give them credit for the Crochet trade because at least they dealt some prospects and got a true, you know, number one starter. Are you going to sign him to an extension? Or is he just going to be a rental because you're too scared to give him a 6 or 7 year deal? Because that's what he's going to want. Are you too scared to do that? Walker Buehler, yeah, you got him for 1 year, which was lucky, by the way. But you also kind of overpaid for a guy who had a wretched first half last season and really only sort of upped his value in the playoffs when he pitched his butt off in the World Series. But you kind of overpaid for him. And granted, it's a one-year deal. That's fine. But it's just like they got to stop being so afraid. And it's all of them. It's Kennedy. It's Henry. It's Breslow. It's the whole triumvirate there. Just they have a fear of multi-year contracts, and they're missing out on players who want to come here and could make this team better, could get you to 90 wins, could get you to potentially winning the division. Like, this division, I think, is pretty open. Baltimore seems to be going backwards a little bit. These new owners who came in and said, oh, we're going to spend money, all of a sudden they're not spending money. Toronto is going to blow it up next year. Tampa will always be a joke. The Yankees, they should have done it last year when they had Soto. They failed. You know, Aaron Judge isn't going to get any younger. They have so much bad money on that team. Your division is there for the taking. Just, you know, grow a pair and go sign someone for more than a year or a year with an option. Go hand out a real contract. That's how you show the baseball community and the fans that you actually give a damn. But they're too scared to do it. And this is why they'll lose out on Bregman too, because they're going to get spooked by the multi-year deal. And look, to be honest, I'm not a Bregman guy. I'll be okay with it. I know a lot of other fans will be upset, but I'll be fine with it. If they're not even willing to trade for Nolan Arenado because he has 3 years left and that scares them, then that's pathetic. Like, if they're too scared to do that when he's there for the taking, when St. Louis is begging you to take him and you're not even going to do that, and instead it's going to be, no, we're good with Hamilton and Grissom at second base, you know, two of the cheapest options that we could find, that's pathetic. And at that point, you really don't care about winning. You really just care about the numbers. So, yeah, Kennedy looks more and more like a fraud every day. He just continues to talk out of both sides of his mouth. That guy is the bane of my existence right now with the Red Sox, more so than even John Henry. Because if you believe Cotillo and the other reporters, at least John Henry was willing to give $700 million to Juan Soto. Now, he didn't take it, and he probably wouldn't have taken it, but at least he tried. Sam Kennedy just, I don't know. He has this fear of these multi-year deals, and I think that's now, you know, bleeding into Breslow a little bit. It's just, it's bad. They got to get going on something, because these short-term little deals or these reclamation projects, they don't get you to the World Series. They sometimes don't even get you to the playoffs. And if this team misses the playoffs again, then it's going to be a complete embarrassment.
I guess the only thing I'll say is this was supposed to be the Orioles' 5-10 year window, and with their new owners, and they're not doing anything. Go make a move. Go make a splash. Go jump them and go take their time. Like, go run the AL East for the next 5-10 years. You got Roman Anthony. You got Christian Campbell. You got Marcelo Meyer. You got Garrett Crochet. Extend them. Go take the AL East for the next 5-10 years. The Yankees got 1 year, 2 years left at max to try to go win it. That's it. And then this is the Red Sox and the Orioles. And the Orioles aren't going to – they're going to lose Gunnar Henderson. They're going to lose their big-time players. The Red Sox need to take advantage of this time. Go make the – go take a couple runs at the ALCS, at the World Series. I would love for that to happen. Alex Bregman's probably safer, if you think about it, than Trevor Story was at the time. He's not coming from Colorado. He's won the World Series twice. big time college name. Like, you know, he's safe. He loves to play this game. He's never been hurt. I just think he's a safe bet, and I don't know why you would not sign him if you're the Red Sox in this situation. I don't know if I love him as, like, if I was evaluating the players myself, I would probably like someone else over him, but he's right there. He wanted to come here. Go sign him. It's not that hard. You have a window. Go capitalize on it, and they won't. It's just so frustrating. It's embarrassing because I feel like other teams are just making fun of the Red Sox right now.
The one thing I'm getting really sick of with Kennedy, besides everything, is he gets on his soapbox every time he's on the Nesson set, at least once during the interview, and he'll be like, we've won 4 world championships, and, you know, this is what we've done, and this is our history. Well, here's the reality of that. The three GMs that won those championships, they're long gone. And I know Epstein is nearby, but he's not in that capacity. And he hasn't made any operational decisions to the roster since 2011. 14 years. Okay. Sam Kennedy needs to stop taking credit for that. This is like in The Lion King when Scar took over. That's what this is. And I've had all these conspiracy theories that maybe Kennedy is the ultimate decider. Maybe Breslow's doing a lot of the legwork, but when it arrives to Kennedy, maybe it gets nixed at that point. I don't know. But as I've pointed out, there's two consistencies here. Post Dombrowski, the only person that ever gets fired is the guy in Breslow's spot, including Dombrowski in the end. Everybody else keeps their jobs. O'Halloran, Romero, Ferreira, even Alex Cora. Alex Cora wasn't fired. Chaim Bloom inherited him the first time around and had him for like 4 months till we got to January, and then all hell broke loose with that scandal. So that's one consistency here in the post-Dombrowski era. The other one that I've never brought up before is that Breslow is never, and Bloom also, were never allowed to hire a GM under them. They were never allowed to bring in their own guy to serve immediately below them. Bloom had O'Halloran, who was a holdover, and Breslow has had nobody. He's not been allowed to bring another guy in. And that tells me that Breslow doesn't have all the power here. I think the buck stops with Kennedy. I think Kennedy is a wannabe GM. I think he's a wannabe Dave Dombrowski guy. And the dude's a fraud. And he is the common denominator for all the failure in the post-Dombrowski era. When Dombrowski was here, there was no question he was the guy. All decisions stopped with him. And that was that. And I'm wondering in hindsight, and we'll never know this, I wonder what their relationship was. Maybe Dombrowski didn't take him seriously. Maybe Kennedy felt snubbed. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But Kennedy's the common denominator. And I think it's a long shot we're going to win a World Series with him serving in his current capacity. It is the way it is. And then with this Bregman thing, he and Cora supposedly want him, Breslow doesn't. We'll see how it shakes out, but I don't know. I don't think Kennedy wants to pay him, but we'll see.
Yeah, I am curious too about the power dynamic. And I think this is part of the problem with having essentially an absentee owner, which is kind of what Henry is. He's been so far removed from, you know, being like in the trenches of really, you know, caring about this baseball team, because he's out, you know, buying a racing team, buying a soccer team, buying a hockey team, and then those all tank. Like, it just, Henry's a collector. He just collects things for his portfolio. The Red Sox just happened to be one of the first prominent ones, and that's when he really gave a damn. But now he kind of doesn't. He's just on his yacht out in Alaska all the time and, you know, just kind of hanging out. And I feel like you're right. I feel like that's what it comes down to. You know, it goes from the chain up from Preslo to Kennedy because Henry's not there. And Kennedy is sort of serving as the hand of the king, if you will, and sort of saying, well, I don't, you know, I don't think that contract's really in our best interest, Craig. So let's look somewhere else. Like, I hope that's not the case because a guy like Sam Kennedy should not have that much influence, but I feel like he kind of does. And I feel like Henry lets him have that influence because Henry just can't be bothered. So that's deeply concerning because if that ties into why they haven't been as aggressive as they should be, and, you know, Kennedy just kind of keeps going out there hoping that he can, you know, soothe talk the fan base and convince them otherwise, then that's a massive problem because at that point, until you remove him, you're not going to get anywhere. And I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon.
He's not being removed. So he's either going to have to quit or he's not. He's not leaving. And you're exactly right. Breslo, Bloom, they both didn't have enough power. I think they wanted to control Dombrowski, and that's why he's gone. And he didn't want any part of that. And that's exactly why the Red Sox had to interview 100 different candidates, and they offered basically Breslo the job because he was their 10th guy, because nobody wanted to work under anybody at this point. It's not, you know, Kim Ng came from the Marlins and turned down the interview because she didn't want to work under him. I mean, it's embarrassing. It's exactly what's going on. It's spreading around the league that Sam Kennedy's in charge. He's probably been in charge for longer than we've even noticed. You know, I know you guys have been talking about it forever. I know a lot of people have been talking about these conspiracy theories, but it's been going around for a long time, and he's definitely in charge. And yeah, he's scared of these long-term contracts, and it's embarrassing that we have this guy that's not qualified running the organization, and we tell everybody that Breslow's in charge, and he probably isn't. And I think it's a lot of – we had rumors last year that Alex Cora had more pull than Breslo, or he had more pull than Bloom. So it's just who is in charge. I would love for somebody to just wipe house and hire a bunch of new people, but it's not going to happen. Like Terry said, everyone else keeps their job besides the CBO title. It wasn't always that title, I guess. But yeah, that position's always been eliminated. Everyone else keeps their job. It's really weird. No other organization really works that way. The guy in charge gets to bring in their own guys. Like the manager gets to pick the pitching coach. That didn't happen this year, though. Usually the manager gets to pick his own coaches. Breslo got to pick his coach this year, but not his own GM. So it's just weird how there's no normal chain of command. So we'll see.
A couple of things real quick here. As I've pointed out, Kennedy led the search both times, and only Kennedy. He hired Bloom. He also hired Breslo, and nobody else would even have a conversation with Kennedy. And a few people did, but they weren't people you would want. Like Neil Huntington, the guy who kept getting fleeced as the Pirates GM, gave up Chris Archer. No. He acquired Chris Archer for Tyler Glasnow and Austin Meadows. One of the worst trades of the last decade. Another guy was Gabe Kapler, who I wouldn't want. Just scandal-ridden and not a good manager during his time with the Giants. But the interesting thing about the Breslo hire was Henry didn't even meet with him. He was supposed to and then never did. So Kennedy really is like, he's really wielding it as far as who gets that job. What we need now so bad, and I've mentioned this at least once, not in a while, but what we need is for Cotillo or Alex Speer to have a sit-down interview with Heim Bloom, a confessional, a tell-all, Bloom's future is set. He's going to be the top executive in St. Louis after this season. And he kind of already is. What he's doing this year is he's doing infrastructural changes. He's getting his analytics guys in place and player development guys and all that. So he's doing a little bit of housekeeping. And then Mozeliak is filling out the last year of his deal. But man, Bloom has nothing to lose. He can have that interview and just absolutely torch that front office. Red Sox fans need that so bad. They really do. And I don't know if it'll happen, but it would be great if it did happen.
Yeah, they need a similar to what, you know, I don't know, what Francona got years later, you know, like when, in his memoir, in his book or something. Not that Bloom is prominent enough to write a book about himself just yet. I'm sure still half of Red Sox Nation would line up for him to sign it for them. But yeah, we need like something like that, something for him to just, even if it's just through like little jabs, you know, it's like, well, it's nice to be with an organization where, you know, the power structure is clear. You know, just even something like that. Just take little jabs at the Red Sox, because it is becoming clear, and still this doesn't absolve him of all of his crimes, but it's pretty clear that Kennedy is way too involved in everything going on with his organization, and it's become a huge problem.
I would like to see Chaim Bloom develop a career for himself before he sits down and tries to dismantle the Boston Red Sox. In an interview,
I get what you're saying. You know, you got to be political about it, but the Red Sox have no friends. And if
Chaim Bloom didn't make any friends as the CBO here,
well, I just think they turned on him halfway through that last season.
I think they didn't give him all the resources they could have, but I don't think Chaim Bloom was cut out for the job.
Well, he made a lot of mistakes. All. Yeah, but I just think there was a coldness to them. I think Chaim has a chip on his shoulder, and I just feel like wait until spring training, wait till March, because if we don't have our guy yet, we're not getting him in March. That's not, unless like a Vladimir for Casas trade happens, but I think he can safely, you know, unload it. Dombrowski did it. It took like 3 years for it to happen, but he was working in Nashville to try to, he was part of that task force trying to get the expansion team into Nashville. And that was his job for a year or so. And that's when he gave
Dave Dombrowski's a Hall of Fame executive. He's won multiple World Series.
He's the GOAT. Yeah.
He can say that. Chaim Bloom can't go and be like, these guys are morons. I mean, he can. He can do whatever he wants. But if people are going to respect him, I mean, it's, I don't know.
I think he can do it. There was nothing with Bloom. The thing I didn't appreciate was his lack of transparency. And I think he was more transparent that last year because he had to be. I don't think he had a choice. But I don't know. I'm not optimistic for St. Louis having him in there. But I think his next 5 years are set regardless.
Well, and St. Louis might as well, because they've bungled that whole thing so badly over there. I mean, they kind of have to accept the fact that, yeah, we're going to suck for the next 5 years. So let's hope at least he gives us a Red Sox style farm system before we start to try and compete again. But yeah, that place is a disaster. So this guy's work cut out for him. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, there's a tweet. What just happened? Nothing. Never mind.
No breaking news.
The John Boy guy's just messing around apparently. Yeah, hopefully it doesn't happen tonight. Tomorrow's Friday, so hopefully it doesn't happen Friday either. But, yeah, we'll wrap on that. I didn't think we were going to go that far into the Kennedy stuff, but, I'd be shocked. I think I've taken this plunge at least once before, but I'd be shocked if Sunday night gets here and something didn't happen. At least Alonso, I think, may have a home by then, but But we'll see, and we'll be back to cover things as they do happen, and hopefully we'll be pleasantly surprised despite all the slander that just took place on this cold January night. So everyone have a good end of your week. Take care.